I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back for a brand new edition of Collider Ladies Night. I am pleased to welcome Kat McNamara to the show.
Hello, hello. Thanks for having me.
For two things. We have Walker Independence, of course, but also I'm really excited about Fool's Paradise because I was just recently talking to Charlie about making his feature directorial debut, and he was kind of giving me the rundown of how it all happened and some of the advice he got from cool people like Guillermo, and now, like, it's finally time to see the movie.
I'm so excited. Charlie is so brilliant. He's, you know, probably one of, I would say, the top three directors I've ever worked with. Just he's just a brilliant storyteller, and he's so creative and so flexible and loves to play. And I think when you're doing something particularly like this film, that's exactly what you need.
Based on the trailer, I definitely get that vibe from it. I'm definitely going to come back to him, too. But the first thing we do on Ladies Night is we play with this dice tower.
Oh, my God. Is that
game.
What this is?
That's what it is. It is a game called Dicey Questions. You get three rolls on the tower, and whatever you roll, it's got a question that it corresponds to, and that is where we start, at least.
It's so funny. I almost brought a new set of dice today just in my pocket because I just got it in the mail. So I'm a dice goblin.
Really?
I'm a dice goblin. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
But
cool. I'm impressed by that. I think it's in the grass. Okay. The tower is made to look like Jurassic Park because it is my favorite movie of all time.
I'm gonna turn this over.
Oh, please do. Please do.
These are beautiful.
Yeah.
Sorry. Again, dice goblin.
I put a lot of work into finding them.
Oh,
I see. It didn't come out of the thing.
It's an 8. It just didn't come all the way.
Oh, it's an 8. Okay. Oh, you got a good one to start. This is a big one, though. I call this one high-low.
Cool.
Can you give me one audition high, but then also one audition low, and tell me what you learned from that low that you then applied to future auditions?
Yes. Audition high. Okay, I've got this one. A long time ago, I'm from Kansas City originally. So when I was first starting out, I would go to Chicago a lot to audition for things. And there's a bunch of amazing theaters up there. And I had auditioned for some plays, one of which Philip Seymour Hoffman was directing. And I had a final callback for it. And so I got to go to Chicago and have a director session with Philip Seymour Hoffman. And just I didn't get the part in the play. Nothing ever came of it. But it was one of my favorite sessions I've ever had because I got to just sit there and listen to his thoughts and work on really interesting material with one of the most brilliant dramatic minds we've ever had.
That's the coolest thing ever.
And I barely even remember a lot of it because it was such an all-encompassing experience, and I just couldn't believe this great that I got to be listening to. But he was quite the kind, creative, generous mind, and I was so grateful to have had that bit of time with him.
Does not surprise me to hear that one bit.
And then as far as audition low, I think it's sort of a silly one, but I'll give it to you anyway. It was actually in one of the sessions for Shadowhunters.
Okay.
It was before the screen test, one of the final, like, director-producer sessions. You know, we'd been in there and we were working on this material, and I was going in and out of the room, and one of the scenes for the audition was one where, you know, Clary storms out of the room at the end, as she often does, in some sort of indignant huff. But I was so focused on the material and just committing to it that I turned around and walked straight into the wall.
Oh, no.
In front of, like, all of our producers, our director, the network, everything. And I just sort of went, well, you know, at least I've put forward my authentic, clumsy self, and they know what they're getting into. And I still got the part. So just, I guess.
What did you do, though? Like, what is the first thing you did after hitting the wall?
The first thing I did was just think, did that really happen? Okay, cool. I just probably made a silly face or did a little step ball change because I tend to try and play things off with physical comedy.
I respect that.
That's how I deal with trauma and awkward things in life.
As someone who would stand there and think, I just want to crawl on a ball and die right now, but just basically stand there and be frozen for everybody else. I like your approach to handling that better.
Just turn into the skid. You know, that's how I approach life.
All right. I respect that.
But yeah, I guess what I learned from that is, you know, it doesn't matter if you fall flat on your face or run into a wall. If you're doing the work, it can still work out in your favor.
You're gonna get the role.
Yeah.
All right, you got your second role on the tower.
All right, I'll try and do better this time.
It's my fault. I lost a piece of sticky tack that keeps the doors open
nicely. It's a one.
A one. This is one that I really wanted to get because apparently we're birthday twins. So this is called Best Birthday. I want to know the best birthday party you ever had.
Ooh. You know, it's really silly, but one of the best birthday parties I've ever had. I love celebrating other people's birthdays, and I love making those days special for the people that I love. But I'm one of those people that when it's a party and attention is all about me, it's slightly uncomfortable.
Is that a Scorpio Sagittarius thing? Do you consider yourself Scorpio or Sagittarius?
So I am fully a cusp.
Okay.
And this is because I'm, you know, we're the day that can be either. I think I have qualities of both and it serves me very well. Okay. I'm very much have that fiery, passionate Scorpio-ness. And, you know, if you hurt someone I love, that's not a good thing. But also I'm so much more of a Sagittarius. You know, I love going with the flow and seeing where life takes me and you know, getting on it. I have this romantic idea of buying a plane ticket one day, just getting on an airplane and having an adventure and then just having a bag packed, you know,
oh,
and seeing what happens. Just kind of seeing where life takes you. But as far as the best birthday party I've ever had, over the last couple of years, I think I found my sweet spot. I have my favorite bar in L.A.
Ooh.
And I just call them up and I say, hey, can I just have a table on this side of the bar? And I just send a text to folks that I know are around. I'm like, hey, I'm going to be at this bar. I'm going to make cookies. There'll be ice cream. Come hang out. Come give me a hug. I miss you. Because I'm never here. I'm always off shooting somewhere.
The best idea.
It's the best because it's so low key. And then it just fills
It's no
up.
Pressure on anybody.
Yeah. And it's been the most amazing thing to figure out which of my friends know each other that I had no idea. Or there's a couple of friends that have now been dating for like 6 years that met at one of my birthday parties that didn't know each other at all. And it's been just a really cool kind of demarcation of, because some people I only see this one night a year because we're always on different corners of the world.
And that's so nice.
Really special and chill.
Okay. So you go to this bar, you're having a birthday drink. What is the drink of choice?
It depends. This bar in particular has amazing cocktails, so I usually see whatever's on the menu. But my go-to is usually Scotch Neat.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
If I'm feeling, you know, if it's a bit summery and I'm feeling a bit warm, I usually go for a gin gimlet or just Scotch Neat.
That sounds so adult when I'm like, just give me a glass of Prosecco or I'll drink a beer, but only a Hefeweizen.
Yeah.
Only a Hefeweizen.
I drink like an old man. It's fine.
I feel like that's an easier way to be than me, who only drinks two things and two things alone. All right. You got another roll in the tower. Last one up. I have one that I'm hoping you roll.
What if I roll and a T-Rex comes out?
I wish.
Right?
If I could make that happen, all of my dreams will have come true.
Fantastic.
Ooh.
No, but it's a seven.
It's a seven. Okay. So this is just a really random one that I came up with because this happened to me while I was writing your questions.
Okay.
I'm just calling it Spider. And also because this says a lot about someone. You are home alone.
Yeah.
You are just sitting around. A gigantic spider appears and is near you.
Uh-huh.
What do you do?
Very quietly, carefully, and calmly so as not to alarm or disturb the spider. I will get up and find a cup and a piece of paper, and I will scoop the spider and take it outside or throw it out a window or onto my balcony at least.
I know what you mean by throw it out a window, but you just said that so sweetly and kindly. Throw it out the window.
It doesn't kill it. It's a spider. No. I'm sure it'll float down gently on the wind and Spider-Man is way down somehow. At least that's my fantasy.
That makes me so happy because I thought I was one of the only people who do, like, what I do the double cup thing.
Oh, that's
and whenever
smart.
I tell someone I do that, I'm like, why are you going to those lengths to protect a spider when you can smush and trash? I'm like, because it doesn't know what it's doing. It is a living thing.
Yeah, and it's just like, you know, it's like ghosts. It's like you respect your space, I'll respect
mine.
Oh,
you're a ghost believer.
You know, we'll work it out.
Do you believe in ghosts?
I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like that too.
Yeah.
I like that too. Do you watch the show Ghosts on CBS?
I love that show. Actually, I just saw Rose at a Comic-Con this weekend, and she's
I literally just spoke to her the other week. She's amazing.
My God. She is so lovely. It's there's certain people you meet in this industry that you're like, how
can you guest star on that show?
Can you
I
make that happen? Please?
I manifest things on Ladies
Night. I would love
to
guest star on Ghosts. Thank you, please. Someone out there in the universe make that happen. I love that show. I think it's so smart and so funny, and in the most self-aware, beautiful way.
Yeah. I feel like a show shouldn't be able to be both funny and so emotional at the same time, but they're able to turn on a dime like I've never seen before.
I know. That's talent. That's human emotion, though, because humor and vulnerability are so closely related. It's fascinating.
It is so true. I'm so impressed by them. All right. You have hit the meat of our interview. Every single Ladies Night episode begins here. Okay. What was the movie, the performance you saw, the personal experience you had, you name it, that first made you say to yourself, I absolutely have to be an actor?
It was actually an experience I had, because growing up, I never knew that being an actor was a job. I wanted to be an economist. That was my dream. I wanted to go into developmental economics and solve the world's problems of economies in developing countries. But that obviously did not turn out to be. I was going to school for it and all of that, and I ran into a family friend who was directing a community theater show, needed a dancer. I'd done ballet my whole life and was the kid who would try anything. So I said, hey, sure, why not? I'll go and do theater for the summer and see what that's like, because I have no idea. And I remember walking on stage on opening night, and it hit me like a brick wall. You know, in life we have these moments of clarity, and they're few and far between, but there are certain moments where you know something beyond a shadow of a doubt. And that's what happened to me. I walked on stage and I went, oh my gosh, this is what I was put on this earth to do. To tell stories and to create characters and to be a part of whatever this cumulative magic is happening.
Oh, I have so many follow-up questions.
Yeah.
The first thing I wanted to ask, because I was reading you graduated high school and college very, very early, mm-hmm. and I feel like sometimes when that happens, and also given your earliest ambitions to get into economics, you could maybe feel forced to go down a particular path rather than pursue the arts. Did you ever encounter that, or were the people around you always supportive about it?
I actually didn't. I was very, very lucky that my family immediately went, well, look, if you're happy, that's wonderful. And, you know, as long as – I don't know that they fully understood it at first. My mom is the best supporter I've ever had, because she's always left it mine. I've seen so many parents in this industry who sort of – take over the career or live vicariously or kind of manipulate it or control it in some way. And my mom has always let it be mine in every way, shape, and form, and have complete agency in all of this. And I'm so grateful to her for that. But I remember the first few months of doing this, she would keep asking me, going, and you're still having fun? Like, you're sure? Like, this is still something you want to keep doing? And I was. And, you know, I think they always wanted me to get a college education, which I did. I actually went to school for business and economics. To kind of for a myriad of reasons, but I'm very glad I did, and it's I've been very, very lucky to have that support and to see them who are all in the science and medical field now. What I think they saw as me doing something that I enjoyed until I figured out what I wanted to do. Now they actually see it as a career because they've seen the longevity that a career in entertainment can have and sort of so the many nice. Different facets it can hold. And it's really been wonderful. I'm so grateful to my family.
So as someone who didn't really know that could be a career option, and especially with parents who weren't in the know and part of the industry, mm-hmm. when you first decided you wanted to become an actor, what did you think step one to becoming an actor was? And now having done it, would you recommend that as a first step to somebody else, or did you find something more effective along the way?
No, I actually would, because all I knew was that I loved it and I wanted to keep doing it. And I was lucky to be in Kansas City that has a huge, beautiful theater community, both community theater and regional professional theater and all of these, you know, there's tours that come through all the time, and there's such a gorgeous arts community there. And I just kept going and kept finding opportunities and meeting people. And I always give my utmost gratitude to the Kansas City theater community because they raised me artistically. And not only did they teach me how to explore and be creative and think outside the box, but how to have work ethic. Because there's no ego in that kind of community. Everybody does every job. And as long as we get the show up at the end of the day, that's what matters. And do everything we can to make it the best story possible. And, you know, so it never mattered what job you were doing or what part of production you were. Everyone was valued and everyone's work mattered. And everyone worked hard. And that, you know, that's kind of my biggest takeaway. But just start wherever you're at. Find those opportunities and grow from them. And I was really grateful to have had that.
So what wound up being the key to bridge the gap from regional community theater, that type of arena to, you know, Hollywood or whatever your first professional gig was?
Well, the first step...
Not that regional theater isn't professional.
No, no, no.
I definitely didn't mean to imply that.
No, I know what you mean, though. But it was a chance encounter. You know, they brought in actors from New York all the time to play the leads in different shows and bring in audiences. And there was a woman who had come from Broadway and was going straight into a show called A Little Night Music in New York after we'd worked together. And, you know, I get a random phone call one day saying, hey, would you like to come audition for A Little Night Music on the Broadway revival with Catherine Zeta-Jones and Angela Lansbury? They needed an immediate replacement for the show. And this woman had said, you need to look at this girl. She's perfect for this part. I loved working with her. And I got a phone call. And a week later, I had never been to New York City before in my entire life. The biggest city I'd been to was Chicago. And I thought, you know what? There's never going to be another chance in my life that I have to audition for Broadway. And I've never been to New York. So let's just go. And I went to New York. I did the audition. Then I did the callback. Trevor Nunn was directing the show, who's just such a prolific theater director. So I got to, you know, meet him and work with him in the callback. And then a few hours later, I was at the airport flying home. And they called me and told me that I've booked the part. A week later, I'm living in New York City working on Broadway.
Oh, that's incredible.
And, you know.
Angela Lansbury.
Yeah. Well, and what's even more astronomical is, you know, I worked with Catherine and Angela for 6 months. Then they left the show. Bernadette Peters and Elaine Stritch came in to finish out the other 6 months. And
it's so crazy.
Going from Kansas City, not even knowing that, having never been to New York, moving there, working with these four powerhouse leading ladies for an entire year, it was the biggest dream and the biggest life-altering shock of an experience, but it changed my life. And I'm so grateful to those four ladies who taught me everything.
Oh, that is the coolest thing ever. I want to come back to the four of them, but briefly, so you get your first Broadway gig.
Yeah.
Was there ever a situation when you thought, like maybe I'll stay in theater, maybe I'll stay in Broadway, or was there always an itch to act for the camera as well?
I had never fully thought about it. I thought, when I moved to New York, I'm like, okay, because what I really wanted to do for a living, my first idea of working as an actor would be is I'd work at the bank as a financial analyst or a financial advisor until 5 p.m., and then curtain goes up the theater at 8. So I was just in Kansas City because I never thought I'd leave. I was like, oh, I'll just work at the bank and then finish up work and go do shows at night. And that's grand. That would be a perfect life. Then I moved to New York thinking, oh, well, I'll just go do this show for 6 months and then move back home. And after about a week of living in New York City, I quickly discovered that I was never moving home.
Yeah.
And that New York fully made me one of its own and changed my life forever.
Oh, wow. All right. I have so many screen credits to hit. That is incredible. When you shift to screen credits, of all of your earliest TV and film appearances, which would you credit with putting into perspective the most, the types of stories you would want to tell going forward, and also the types of on-set environments you would want to work in?
Ooh. It actually, it's interesting because I learned a lot from so many of the jobs that I did. One of the job that brought me to L.A., was the first time Disney Channel tried to do High School Musical, the series. And at that time, it was called Madison High. And it was about 13 years ago now. They had Miss Darbus went to a different school and created a new drama program. And, of course, it was the TV version of High School Musical, basically. And all the character archetypes were the same, and it was, you know, but just different people. And the cast and that experience of going into, you know, musical boot camp for 2 weeks, learning all the dance numbers, all the songs, being in the studio, working with everyone, having that kind of camaraderie and building a show that would have its kind of own image and its own lore was so all-encompassing but I had the best time. And, you know, I didn't really know at the time, but that ultimately would serve me really well going into something like Shadowhunters, which I think is what ultimately answers your question. Because that show for me, it had this epic nature to it and a character that was challenging but had growth and a cast and crew environment that truly was going to work with family every day. And that is ultimately what I strive for seeking out in the future and as I continue. And there was a rarefied air on the Shadowhunters set, and it was something that I will always be grateful for.
That is
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Such a beautiful thing. Going back to the High School Musical show, was that one of those situations where they filmed a pilot and then it didn't get picked up?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll lump that in with Happyland, because, correct me if I'm wrong, Happyland was your first series regular role.
Yeah, that went to series. Yeah, I had done a few pilots. Like, I did that pilot, and I did a CBS pilot with Jason Isaacs a few years later, and who I still love and adore, and he played my dad and still basically might as well be. And, you know, so many other beautiful things. But, yeah, that was the first on-screen that lasted.
Okay, so when you go through a situation like Happyland where you get a series and then it doesn't get a renewal second season, but also when you do things like, because that's a lot of things that that fans aren't really aware of, that you pour your heart and soul into making a pilot that just doesn't get picked up. And then, you know, it's still a project that meant something to you that you worked on, but it's not necessarily added to your IMDb. So people aren't aware of it. When you're just starting out in this industry, how do you make sure experiences like that don't cause you to lose confidence in yourself and take away from the motivation to, you know, pick yourself up after and forge forward?
I was really lucky at the beginning of when I started doing theater, actually. One of my mentors at the very, very beginning put everything into perspective in the most beautiful way. And she said to me, you know, an actor's job is to audition. And you go into that room for 10 minutes and you tell your story and you create this character and that's your performance and that's your job. You leave the room, you've done your job, you leave it behind. If the job works out, that's something extra, different, and special. But if not, you've done your job and you move on to the next job. And so I've always, I mean, obviously there are those roles that you just connect with and every fiber of your being will fight for that and you can't let it go sometimes. And I've had those as well, but those are a lot fewer and farther between than other things. And that sort of helps in a way. But I think having so many things that, you know, haven't worked out for whatever reason, and a lot of times it's no reason other than there just wasn't space on the network this year. And so with the way that television goes, then that's kind of the end for that show. And it taught me to kind of invest in things and put my heart into it, but know that even if something doesn't work out, there's something else that's coming down the pipeline.
Yeah.
That wasn't meant to be for whatever reason, but it grew you and it led you to whatever's coming next.
I'm ruining my timeline here, but I want to bring in Walker Independence right now because you're waiting for a potential season 2 renewal.
Yes.
That is a scary thing to do, no matter the time of year, no matter the situation.
Yeah.
There's a lot of extra pressure given every decision that's made right now has long-term ramifications on the way this industry operates. Right. Is there any difference in how you're processing the renewal experience now versus like maybe when you were waiting for it on Shadowhunters?
Yeah. You know, when it comes to this year specifically, I knew that, you know, with everything's changing at the CW. Everything's changing in television in general. And there are so many options and opportunities and unorthodox ways in which shows stay, continue, get canceled, get renewed somewhere else entirely. have become so resigned when it comes to these things. I just leave it up to the television gods. I've gone, you know what? I've put my heart and soul into this show. I've had the best time with this cast and crew. We're all chomping at the bit to keep telling this story. We just, you know, we just barely hit the tip of the iceberg of what all these relationships can be and what this town can be. Because that's so much of what Walker Independence is the spirit of this town, which for us includes our crew and mm-hmm. our writers and everyone else. And so moving forward, I'm hoping for the best, but, you know, ultimately whatever's meant to happen will happen. But, I mean, if I could go back and be in that playground of a 15,000-acre ranch with that amazing yes. group of people again, I would give my left foot for it.
It is such a beautiful way to look at all that. I know that part of this job is probably one of the hardest things because it's something you're passionate about and you don't have control over certain elements. And as someone who is deeply obsessed and passionate about what she does, I always think about that. And I give you all the credit in the world for powering through it.
Thank you.
I want to go back to Shadowhunters really quickly because number one on the call sheet for the first time is a pretty big deal right there.
Yeah.
So of all of the past number ones on the call sheet you have worked with, who taught you the most about how you would want to carry yourself when you're kind of setting the tone on a series like that?
When it comes to, okay, there's a few. That's
oh,
nobody's
ever asked
me that question.
I will take more than one.
I will say that, you know, the four ladies I worked with on Broadway taught me a hell of a lot. They all carried themselves with such grace and poise and you know, especially people like Catherine and Bernadette who have images outside of it and yet still have to balance the jobs that come outside of work with the job that they're doing for the cast and crew and everything else. And then, you know, Elaine and Angela, who Elaine was in her 90s and Angela was in her 80s when they were doing the show. And I always say that's what I want to be when I'm 80, 90 years old. I want to be doing eight shows a week on Broadway wearing a men's shirt and a, you know, fisherman's cap. But, you know, coming back to film and television, the two that pop into my head instantly are Dylan O'Brien and Jason Isaacs, who both of which I worked with. You know, I worked with Dylan on Maze Runner. And
he's
I
good dude right there.
I've known Dylan forever and just I hadn't worked with him. I'd known him for a lot longer than I'd worked with him. And when I got on that set, I was astounded by how dedicated he was and how diligent he was to making sure that everything was done with quality and it was all done properly. But also, he had the best time of anyone on that set. The balance he had between, you know, the fun and the silliness and the goofing off and the pranks you can do on set and the camaraderie you can build in that way, but with still not sacrificing any of the seriousness of what we're trying to do mm-hmm. and the story we're trying to tell, that was brilliant. And then getting to work with someone like Jason, I was 17 when I worked with him, who was so generous and giving and open, having a massive job to do himself, but really played host is kind of the best way I can put it to so many people, including myself, who was pretty new to film and television at the time. I give huge credit to Isaiah Mustafa and Harry Shum Jr., who were both on Shadowhunters, who, you know, Harry had been through Glee.
Some of the best.
I'm so grateful to the people that I've worked with over the years. But Harry, who'd just been off of Glee and had been through, you know, one of the hugest experiences you ever could on mm-hmm. television at the time. And Isaiah, who's been in the industry forever and 5 days and has worked with everyone and is beloved by everyone. Both of them are actually beloved by everyone they've ever worked with. And you can see why. It's that not only their professionalism, but their care and their openness and their warmth that they bring to any environment they're on. And, you know, I've done my best to do the same and to kind of carry on all of their legacies in that way.
Before I ask my follow-up question, I'll just say the Maze Runner series does not get the credit it deserves. It was beloved. A lot of people really were into it. But I feel like it needed to be put on a higher tier in more minds in terms of young adult book-to-film adaptations because yeah. Like, Wes knocked that out of the park with what I imagine, at least, is less than most have.
Well, what's interesting about Wes is he had a background in VFX, mm-hmm. as I'm sure you know. But this was
I watched too much of his work on YouTube before that first
yes,
movie came out.
It's so true. So that's what it was, is he had all this work on YouTube that he showed to studios, and everybody was chomping at the bit to get him on. And obviously, you know, he didn't have the biggest budget for the first film. So he had to do a lot of things himself and, like, really make it work. But what he was able to do with so little and with that cast that was so committed. And those guys I yeah. love to death. They're just the best community of people. But it was such a wonderful thing to be able to see. I remember going to the theater to see the first one as I was trying to figure out whether I wanted to do the second one because there wasn't a script. There wasn't anything. I had the books and the first film that I had to make my decision based on. And of course I said yes.
I don't blame you.
Because the film was so well done and such an interesting tone for YA film and television at the time that I chomped at the bit to be a part of that.
Scorch Trials was one of my earliest set visits, and I feel like all of my earliest set visits have the biggest place in my heart forever and ever and ever.
Of course. Well, that set was so fun. We all lived in the same hotel, in the same hallway, on the same floor, and so we just left our doors open for the 2 months
there. In Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Yeah, it's great fun. We gotta love New Mexico. Yeah. I mean, I've gotten to really love New Mexico in the last year.
Oh, is that where Walker shoots?
Yeah, we shoot in Santa Fe.
So I feel like there was a period of time where literally every set visit I went on was there, to the point that I had running routes there because I was there so frequently and I knew what I liked to run.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go back to my Shadowhunters number one on the call sheet question to veer into Walker Independence a little. So you had a lot of great people setting an example for you, but what is something new about being the lead of a series that you learned along the way on Shadowhunters that now you find yourself prioritizing and using on Walker?
It's sort of the same concept. It's finding that balance between work and the community aspect, because that's so important, especially when you're number one on the call sheet, because you're so often, when guest stars and new crew members, even new directors that are coming in, you're their first point of contact and the person they'll see the most and the person that is most kind of around and in front of everyone. And to be kind of that person to go, hey, welcome, this is our show, do you need anything? Because also when you're new on a set, there's so little you want to ask for, at least for me. Whenever I'm, you know, the new person on a set, mm-hmm. or like a guest, I don't know who to ask, so I don't want to ask the wrong person. And just being able to go, hey, what do you need? And then kind of direct and make sure that everyone's taken care of is such a huge part of it. Because then everybody has a better day. Everyone's happy and has water and is, you know, feels comfortable. Then you can play and work and everything else kind of disappears. But, you know, I learned how to do that on Shadowhunters just by nature of me being so, I loved the book so much. And just every time we got a new person, it was a new character, and I was getting to meet a character that I'd read and loved.
I love looking at it that way with an adaptation.
I remember Jade Hasune, who played Meliorn on Shadowhunters. He's this Seely fairy person. He was so perfectly cast, and this was with every single person on our show. But, you know, our casting directors did such a great job of finding people that not only encompassed the book's character, but then had something else that they brought to it that enriched it and just shifted everything to where it made it exciting. And I remember I was walking by Jade. He was sitting there, he was half-dressed in his Seely armor for a fitting, and he was reading City of Bones, the first book in the Mortal Instruments series. And I walked by, and we both looked at each other in the same time. He goes, Clary? And I go, you're playing Meliorn. What's your name? Jade? And he's like, oh my God, your name's not Clary. And so we had this like very awkward both fangirling over each other.
Oh, I get that.
But that's kind of the most indicative thing about what makes it exciting is you get to build this world together. And that's, you know, when you're number one, you get to see so many of the things from the ground up and build it and bear witness to every aspect, whether it's behind or in front of the camera. Also, coffee.
Do you know what Rose told me when we were talking?
What did she
say? Had given up coffee for a period of time. I'm curious if it still stands and if it's still working for her. But, like, you just see the expression on my face change, basically saying, like, I'm trying to respect you, but I think you're crazy for doing that right now.
Yeah. I didn't drink coffee. I got through university. I got through Broadway. I did everything. I never drank coffee.
Wow.
Until episode 5 of season 1 of Shadowhunters.
What happened on that particular episode?
We were shooting this werewolf fight in amongst all these shipping containers. And it just so happened to be spring in Toronto, and there was a thunderstorm. And as you know, on film sets, if there's lightning within a certain number of miles, you can't shoot for 30 minutes. So we were on a night shoot, and there was lightning. 22 minutes went by, lightning. 27 minutes went by, lightning. And this kept happening. It's about 11 p.m. when it started. It got to 4 or 5 in the morning, and this was still happening, and we hadn't shot anything.
No.
We ended up having to cancel the rest of the night and come back to it another day. But I remember about 3 in the morning, I walked up to the craft services table, and I was looking. I'd had all the snacks. I'd had so much Diet Coke, I couldn't see straight. And Matt DiDario was getting a cup of coffee, and I went, yep. And I've never looked back.
That's the moment. That's the moment. I have to wind down with you soon. I have two more questions. I do want to talk about Charlie Day because, again,
Fool's Paradise is going to be his very first feature as a director. So having had that experience with him, what are you looking forward to more actors who work with him as a director to get to experience when he inevitably goes on to direct more features?
Yeah, well, it was such a lovely experience getting to watch him work. We'd met at the Big Slick, which is a huge Kansas City charity event with, you know, Paul Rudd and Jason Sudeikis and the rest of the wonderful comedians that are from Kansas City have started this thing and bring in people like Charlie. So, you know, we met, and then a few months later, he called me up and said, I've got the script, read this part, see if you want to do it, which is how so many people ended up on this film, was just, hey, I've got a part, come in for a day and play. And that's what I ended up doing and had the best time. And as an actor who wants to direct eventually, it was amazing to be able to watch him and to enter a set where the entire crew loved him so much. You could tell that he'd brought in people that he had great working relationships with and had further even more earned his respect as the film continued. But what I loved most about working with Charlie is not only is he so smart and so intuitive at building upon what you're bringing to the story and still shifting and giving you something else to kind of elevate it even more and to continue to build what he's the story he's telling, he's so excited about what you're bringing to the table as well. And so he's not telling you what to do and changing things and giving a correction, as some, you know, that can shut actors down sometimes when they feel like they're being, you know, told that I can roll with the punches. But he had created this environment of building together and playing together and this sort of camaraderie that continued to build and grow, that he was continually excited by an idea that you brought to the table, which sparked another idea that he had, which gave someone else an idea. And then it was just this constant ping pong of creativity that I can only imagine is what happens on the It's Always Sunny set. But it was such a lovely environment to play and create. And that's ultimately what this is supposed to be anyway.
That's so true.
But also, he's just a brilliant storyteller. And his sensibility is uncanny. And I don't know if it's born or bred, but it's in him. And he's fantastic.
Knowing all the people that have influenced you and the types of environments you've gotten to work in, now I want you to direct even more so you can create that for more people.
Yeah, I would very much love to do that.
I'm ending with a selfish question because clearly I'm very into 90s horror. Yeah. And there's a certain one on your IMDb page that hasn't moved in a little bit. What's up with this Urban Legend remake?
Oh, man. You know,
I want that movie.
I want that movie, too.
Or not a remake. It'd be a continuation.
It was a sort of a new retelling of it, is what I can say from the script. I love that Colin Minahan was the director of that. He's just a brilliant, brilliant mind who has gotten to be a good friend. I would love for that to happen. That cast was going to be fantastic. A lot of friends on that cast.
Rebecca Gayheart was supposed to come back, right?
A lot of friends I made through that audition process. The role was a role of a lifetime for me. It was so fun. But who knows? You know, it's one of those things that the studio is no longer even that company anymore, and it's been moved around. And it's industry logistics where in my dream world it would happen. But that I booked that job a week before the pandemic.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So it was, you know, a pandemic. It was a COVID, what's it called?
Yeah.
Casualty. Thank you. Thank you very much.
You never know what can come back. And I know you do horror. Like, I know you've worked with Nick Simon. Like, you can come back and
Nick
you could
Simon,
do it.
My
wonderful.
He's wonderful. Nick Simon.
Riley knows Nick.
I beg Nick all the time. I'm like, when are we working together again? Let's do another film.
I just want you to make more horror movies. You can make whatever you want. I love all your stuff, but make more horror.
What we want to do is Untitled Horror Movie, the sequel, because we had so much fun working as a group on Zoom and we haven't even had the entire cast in one room in person yet.
Ever?
Ever. And so now we want to make a movie together where we can all be in the same space.
That would make me so happy.
Yeah.
I'm rooting for that.
Thank you.
I'm rooting for that. I'm very excited to be here celebrating Walker Independence and also Fool's Paradise,
yes,
which I believe will be in theaters when everybody watches this episode.
In theaters, May 12th. Go see Fool's Paradise. It is brilliant. It's got so many familiar faces doing things you would have never expected them to do. And just the brilliance of Charlie Day.
I'm so excited. I'm so excited to see it. Kat, congratulations on everything you accomplished, everything that is coming your way. Keep spreading the joy and good vibes in this industry. We need as much of it as we can get.
Thank you for having me.
The biggest names in tennis are coming to Paris for the most anticipated Roland Garros in years. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. Experience 3 weeks of unparalleled tournament access as the world's top players in tennis face off against each other. Will the veteran champions continue their dominance, or will a fresh face emerge to challenge their legacy on the clay courts? Daily live coverage of this epic showdown begins Monday, May 20th. Don't miss a matchup. Stream it now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.